Welcome to Chapter 19, The Present Participles. Well, the next three chapters, 19, 20, and 21, on present, aorist, and perfect participles, will be our participle magic chapters. These are going to be some tough chapters. Not that the forms will be so difficult to learn, you'll be able to recognize them fairly easily, but how the participles are used in context. And we'll explore the three ways that they're used. So we're pulling out of the verbs now in terms of we've mastered the six principal parts, the present, the imperfect, the future, the aorist, and the perfect and pluperfect. So these participles, really pay attention, this first one especially with the present participle, will explain how they're used, and that's going to be the trick with these participles, the three ways that they're used. So hang on to your hat, and let's jump into this present participle chapter. First of all, let's look at a participle in the English language. A participle is a verbal adjective, usually formed in English by adding an ing onto the end of the verb. So, for example, we have verbs like walk, I walk, you walk, he, she, it walks, becomes walking as a participle. Sit becomes sitting, and run becomes running. And so basically tagging the ing on is how we form participles in English. Well, that's easy enough. The difficult part with these participles will not be learning their forms, but rather their usage. There are basically three ways that the participle is going to be used. As a verbal adjective, it'll be used as an adjective, and act like an adjective, matching its noun form in gender and case. The girl throwing the ball is my sister. So the girl is identified as to which girl, the one throwing the ball, so the participle helps identify which one. The second use is an adverbial use, and this is where it modifies the verb of the sentence. And so in that case, it would be translated, while Rebecca was throwing the ball, Jane went in the house. So the while Rebecca was throwing the ball tells the when of the verb, Jane went in the house. And then finally, you have the substantive use. And this is where, as the adjectives, this verbal adjective can act as a noun itself. And so you would say, the one who is throwing the ball went in the house. There's no noun to be modified, so it takes over that role. The one who is throwing the ball went into the house. So these are the three uses, the adjectival use, the adverbial use, usually using while, and the substantive use, usually the one who type of usage. So get these clearly in mind, these three usages, and we'll be down the road on these participles. Let's look at each one of these participial usages by itself, just so we've got them nailed down cold. When it's used as a verbal adjective, the participle modifies a noun. So, for example, she found the book lying on the table. The lying on the table tells which book it was and where that book was lying. So it's an adjectival use. Similarly, she spoke to the child sitting on the couch. Sitting on the couch identifies which child, sitting being the participle. Again, noting that in English we form the participle by adding the ing. So this is just a couple of more examples of the verbal adjectival use when it modifies a noun as an attributive adjective. Now, how do you know when it's an adjectival use of the participle? Generally, the adjectival use will take the article. and the adjective will be used to modify the noun, that it matches in number, gender, and case. If the participle is in arthrous, that is, without the article, it may be a predicate adjective, as in the case of the boy is sitting on the table, where the verbal adjective, the participle, functions as a predicate modifier rather than an attributive adjective. The adverbial use of the participle modifies the verb in some way. We'll use the key word while with the present participle to indicate this adverbial usage. So in English, we have the example, while running to the store, he hit the deer. The while running to the store is our participial phrase in the front here. So while running is our actual participle, and it tells when he hit the deer. So it modifies the verb by telling the when of the verb, much the same way an adverb would. You should be aware that while we will generally translate the adverbial usage of the participle by a temporal modifier, like while he was running to the store, the adverbial use can also be causal, because of loosing, or instrumental, by loosing, and there's some other options as far as its adverbial use. So just be aware, while is temporal, can be causal sometimes because of loosing, and can be instrumental sometimes by loosing. So there are some options there just to keep in the back of your mind as you translate the adverbial use of the participle. Now you say, how do you tell the difference between an adverbial use and an adjectival use? The adjectival use generally takes the article, and the adverbial does not, which gives you a hint that this is an adverbial usage. If it is anarthrous, however, and doesn't take the article, it still may be attributive, or it may be a predicate use of the adjective as well. So there's actually, when it's anarthrous, when there's no article, it actually may be one of three, and actually is a little ambiguous there, and the context has to sort it out, whether it's adverbial, whether it's attributive, or whether it's a predicate use of this verbal adjective known as the participle. So for our purposes at this point, when we see it without the article, we'll generally favor the adverbial use, while. Besides the adjectival use and adverbial use, our third use is the substantive use. And this is when there is no noun for the adjective to modify, and the participle steps up to its game so that it becomes noun-like itself. We use the key words, the one who type of thing. So, for example, in English we have the one who is coming, or the one who comes, knows my brother. So the participle form, the one who is coming, there's no noun for it to modify, so it takes over that role in terms of the one who, generic type of thing. He saw the ones speaking to the crowd. The ones speaking to the crowd, that's the participial phrase there. So the substantive is usually translated the one who, or she who, or he who, or they who. And that is our third use of the participle, along with our adjectival use, the boy running, the adverbial use, while running, and now the substantival use, the one who is running. How do you tell a substantive? You'll be able to tell a substantive because there'll be no noun for it to modify. Now, when you form a participle, you'll notice that it will have both verbal elements to it, that is, it'll be a present participle, and also adjectival parts to it as well. So like a verb, the participle will take tense and voice, present tense, and then there'll be an active in a middle passive form. Like the adjective, the participle will take a gender, number, and case. And so actually we'll be using the 3-1-3 declension formats for our participles here. So, little bit of verb, little bit of adjective, the participle. For forming the present active participle, for the masculine and neuter, you basically take the stem of the verb and you add this
"-ont,"
omicron nu tau ending. Or sometimes I look at it as these are the NT endings. And then you put a noun ending after that, using the third declension formats. So we've got lu, the stem, plus our
"-ont,"
participle insertion, and then our third declension endings, os. So it's
luontos
for the genitive singular form. Now the feminine begins with a stem plus an omicron upsilon sigma, an us form, and then the noun endings of the first declension nouns, our graphe endings. So what we have is luuseis. And you can see the ace genitive singular endings on with the extra us in there to tell you that this is a participle and it's a feminine participle and this is a genitive. So the participles will use the 3-1-3 declensional pattern for the masculine third declension, feminine first declension, and third declension for the neuter form. And the key insertion points will be this omicron NT or this NT and us insertion before the noun endings are added. So formation is fairly easy and consistent. The real problem is the use, not the formation. Now looking at this present active participle form, we have luon as our masculine nominative singular. And then we use a third declension. If we go down the masculine using the third declension, we add the omicron NT, or nun tau, which becomes
luontos, luonti, luonta,
using the third declension endings. Now watch out for that luon form. That omega nun ending looks like a genitive plural, but it's really the nominative singular. So you got to be careful with participles. The own ending is the nominative singular, not the genitive plural. For the feminine form, we put the omicron upsilon sigma in, the us in, and then we add the first declension endings on that one. So it's luusa, luuseis, luuse, luusan. Normal endings, bouncing back and forth between the alpha and the eta. The third declension neuter form is
luon,
and then it becomes
luontos, luonti.
You'll notice it matches again. The genitive and dative exactly match the masculine form, and then the nominative and accusative form are exactly the same.
Luon.
And then we've got, of course, that the three uses of this participle will be loosing as an adjective, the one who is loosing as a substantive, and while loosing as the adverbial usage here. So these are the singular, the 3-1-3 singular masculine, feminine, neuter present active participle. The plurals of the present active participle follow the same pattern as what we'd expect. You've got our masculine,
luontes, luonton,
luusi, and
luontas,
using the third declension endings that we've seen before. The feminine uses the first declension endings to be luusai, luuson, luusais, and luusas. And finally, the neuter uses the third declension as well. So we have
Luonta. Luonton.
Luusi. Notice how it matches exactly with the genitive and dative between the masculine, and then the nominative and accusative are exactly the same form.
Luonta.
So the forms, whenever you see this nun tau, you know that it's a participle, present participle. Same thing with the us stuck in there between the first endings and the root stem of the verb. You know you've got a feminine participle. So participles are fairly easy to recognize. The question is, how are they being used? Adverbially, adjectivally, or substantively? The connection of the present participle with time is really non-existent, since the participle is a verbal adjective. Time is not a highlighted feature with this form. The present tense highlights a durative action start, as opposed to the aorist, which features an undefined, oftentimes punctiliar, action start, or how the action of the verb happens. Durative means it's continuous, could be iterative, repeated, and stretched out action. So we translate it loosing. It can be used for antecedent action, action before the main verb. For example, after leaving, he came. It can be used for simultaneous action. While leaving, he came. Or it can be used for subsequent action. Before leaving, he came. So basically, the connection is not one of time with the present participle, but one of duration. So more action start, how the verbal action actually takes place. And so it's more action start, durative, continuous action. So while leaving, he's in the process. So process, that type of thing, is being emphasized in the present, quote, tense form of the participle. Stanley Porter has made an interesting suggestion that in regards to adverbial participles, if the participle comes before the finite verb, it refers to antecedent action. And if it comes after the main verb, then it's either simultaneous, that is while, or subsequent to the action of the main verb. So what he's saying is the order of the constituent parts then determines whether it is antecedent action or subsequent or simultaneous action. So very interesting suggestion. Keep that in mind as you do some of your translation. The physical order of the sentence may make a difference. Now the present middle passive participles are fairly easily recognized. They use the root stem verb, or lu in this case, and they add an
omen,
and then they tag on the second declension endings in a kind of a 2-1-2 pattern for second declension masculine, first declension feminine, second declension neuter. The resulting form is then
luomenos.
And this
omenos,
you'll recognize immediately that this is a participle. These are the middle passives. They're easily declined because they're the 2-1-2, the
logos,
graphe,
hieron
type endings that we're so familiar with in our chant. So they're usually translated passively, which would be being loosed as an adjectival use. The one who is being loosed would be the substantive, and while being loosed would be the adverbial form. Unless you take them as a middle, and then when they go as a middle, they're normally translated active, but then it's again the middle with the emphasis on the subject's participation in the action of the verb, or more indirectly for the benefit of the person who is doing the action. Loosing for herself. But we'll generally translate them in this class at this point simply as passive forms. The one being loosed. So for the singular forms for the present middle passive, we have
luominos,
nominative masculine, and then it takes the second declension on the way down, so it's
luomenu, luomeno, luominon,
os, u, o,
on,
endings of the
logos.
For the feminine form, we just tack the graphe endings on, so it's
luomene, luomenes, luomene, luomenein.
And those endings we're very familiar with. Similarly, for the neuter, we use the
hieron
endings, so it's
luomenon, luomenu, luomeno, luomenon.
Again, the nominative and accusative neuter exactly the same, the genitive and dative sharing the same forms as the masculine. With the
menon
endings, it's real clear that you've got a middle passive participle here. And they are usually translated adjectivally, being loosed, substantively, the one who is being loosed, and adverbially, while being loosed. Now, for the plural forms of this present middle passive participle, they're just as you would expect. You've got the nominative masculine, using the second declension would be
luomenoi, luomenon, luomenois, luomenus.
The oi, on, ois, us endings of
logos
being found there. Similarly, for the feminine, uses the first declension, the graphe endings, so it'd be
luomenai, luomenon, luomenais, luomenas.
And the neuter endings, using the second declension, hieron endings, would be
luomena, luomenon, luomenois, luomena.
Again, the translation for the adjectival usage would be being loosed, the substantival, the one who is being loosed, and the adverbial use, while being loosed. Taken in a passive sense here, the middle, more just translated actively, but we'll translate these forms passively, generally. Here's now the chant for the present active and middle passive participle. Chant for the present active is
luon, luontos, luusa, luuseis, luon, luontos.
Basically, we'll just learn the nominative and genitive form, and because it's a 3-1-3, you know how to construct the rest. Say this chant form with me for the active.
Luon, luontos, luusa, luuseis, luon, luontos.
And one more time.
Luon, luontos, luusa, luuseis, luon, luontos.
Now, we will not chant the middle passive form because it's so easily recognized and it's simply a 2-1-2 format, so the
luomenos, luomenu.
We will not chant this form, but I just want you to be able to recognize this, and they're very easily recognized. So there's no need to memorize them. Now, here's something not to worry about. The future participles. These are rare. There's only about 12 of them in the New Testament. And predictably, they just stick a sigma in, as we have done with luso for the future before. So, for example, you have the root lu, you add the sigma, then you add the
ontos,
the nt, or the nun tau form that we're used to. So you'd have
lusontos
for the genitive masculine, future participle. Similarly, with the feminine, you'd have the lu, you'd add the sigma, and then you'd have the us form that we're used to with the present participle for the feminine. And then the ascending, so it'd be lususes. For the middle passive, again, the sigma precedes the
omenos,
and so it'd be
lusomenos.
And for the future passive, it adds the thes, so it'd be
luthesomenos.
Translation may just go as loosing, almost like a present tense, or will be loosing, or while loosing, or one who will be loosing if in the substantive. So just an example of some of these future participles, if you see one with a sigma and it looks like a present, it's probably a future participle. There's only 12 of them in the New Testament, so don't worry about these. But just be aware that they exist. Remember our old favorite, Amy? Well, in the present participle, you've got to be aware because this form is used pretty frequently. And so let's just buzz through the forms for Amy, our to be or is verb. In the masculine singular nominative, it takes the form on. The genitive is
ontos.
Dative is
onti.
And accusative is
onta.
That's really nice. There's not much new to learn here. Those are simply the endings pulled off of our regular participle. Similarly, the feminine is usa, usais, usay, usan. And so again, we've got the endings pulled off of the present participle for the feminine form. The neuter also,
on, ontos, onti, on.
And so just be aware when you see these forms by themselves, this is our form, amy, as a present participle. The trick comes with the word on and
on,
and both of these look like it could be the relative pronoun. The difference will be that the relative pronoun will have a rough breathing. It'll be hon and
hon,
whereas amy as a participle will be on and on with a smooth breathing. So just be aware of the differences there. And then in our next slide, we'll look at the plural forms of these, but they are as you would expect. And here are the amy plural forms for the present active participle. The nominative masculine singular is
ontes.
Genitive is
onton.
Dative is usi. And accusative plural masculine is
ontas.
Feminine is usai, uson, usais, and usas. The neuter is
onta, onton,
usi,
onta.
And one other little tidbit to throw in here. The participles are negated with may rather than oo. Largely, oo is used with the indicative forms to negate the indicative forms, and may is used to negate almost everything else. Infinitives, participles, imperatives, subjunctives, other forms. But oo is used with the indicative largely. So when you want to negate a participle, you use may rather than oo. Here are a couple translations from the Greek text itself.
Ho
pistuon
eis auton
ou krinetai. The one who believes, or the one who is believing, in him is not judged. Notice this is a substantival use. There's no noun. It is the one who believes in him. The second example is
kai elthon
eis kapharnaum zeituntes
ton yesun.
And they came
elthon
to Capernaum seeking zeituntes, seeking Jesus. And this is an adverbial use telling the purpose, why they came to Capernaum. Notice the zeituntes is anarthrous without the article. So it's taken as an adverbial, telling purpose. The vocabulary for chapter 19. Our first word is
akalutheo,
and it means I follow. The second word is
anopion,
and it means before. The third word is thalassa, and it means sea or lake. The fourth word is kathemai, and it means I sit. The fifth word is
kairos,
and it means time. The sixth word is ute, and it means and not, nor, or neither. The seventh word is
pipto,
and it means I fall. The eighth word is pus, and it means foot. The ninth word is
proserkomai,
and it means I come or go to. And the tenth word is
prosukomai,
and it means I pray.